Welcome to A Contra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI. Welcome back. Get ready, because today we are diving deep into, well, one of the most devastatingly powerful novels of the 21st century, Cormac McCarthy's Pulitzer Prize winner, The Road.
It really is a brutal, necessary text, I think. And our mission today, our deep dive, isn't just about summarizing the sheer dread of it all.
Right.
It's about trying to pull out that profound, almost spiritual core that McCarthy somehow builds from all that ash, the kind of philosophy behind survival at its absolute edge.
Yeah, and to really get into The Road, you first have to grapple with McCarthy's style, his language. He's a titan, obviously, American literature, known for that sparse, almost biblical rhythm. Very distinctive, and famously, he strips away a lot of conventional punctuation, especially quotation marks.
And that's not just stylistic flair, is it? That lack of quotation marks, it's crucial. It sort of blurs everything together, you know, thought, speech, narration.
It really does.
It lifts the whole thing, their struggle, from just a story into something mythic, almost an allegory. It feels less like reading, more like witnessing something ancient, almost inevitable.
And that sense of the universal tragedy comes partly from the cataclysm itself being so vague, right? It's deliberately unnamed.
Exactly. Years after something happened, could be nuclear, volcanic. We just don't know. The world is dead. Ash, gray, cold.
So why keep it so ambiguous? Why not tell us?
Well, I think if he names it, it suddenly becomes sci-fi, you know, about that specific event. By leaving it open, McCarthy forces us to face how fragile everything is.
Our whole civilization.
Yeah, it could all fall apart for any reason. Or maybe no reason. It makes it a timeless fable about human nature stripped absolutely bare.
Okay, so against this gray, dead backdrop, we have our protagonists, an unnamed man and his young son.
Just walking south towards this maybe non-existent promise of warmth down by the coast.
Pushing a shopping cart, of all things. That symbol of the old world, completely repurposed.
Yeah, their entire world loaded into a cart. And the core conflict, it hits you immediately. It's twofold.
Okay.
There's the obvious physical survival, the cold, the constant starvation, the danger from... well, from others. Cannibals, that's the daily reality.
It's relentless.
But the deeper fight, the one that really gnaws at you, is spiritual. How do you stay human when everything, law, community, basic safety is just gone?
And that struggle, that spiritual fight, it gets condensed into the novel's central metaphor, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Carrying the fire.
Yes.
We need to unpack that. What exactly is the fire they're carrying?
The fire is, it's that spark. That ember of human decency. It's compassion, empathy, love. It's the moral compass they cling to when morality itself is, frankly, a liability.
A liability for survival.
Absolutely. To stop carrying the fire means becoming one of the bad guys. It means giving in to the kind of depravity needed for just raw physical survival. And the weight of that commitment, the sheer stakes, are shown in this one grim detail, the pistol. The man has a pistol with only two bullets left. It's just chilling. It's the ultimate awful contingency plan. It speaks volumes about his love, his desperation.
Those two bullets. One for the boy, one for himself.
Right. If they face capture or something worse, it shows he's already thought it through, calculated that absolute limit. There's a line of suffering, of compromise he won't let his son cross. He's decided that beforehand.
Wow. Just thinking about that level of calculation. Every step, every encounter must be weighed like that. And the whole burden rests on just these two people.
And they are everything in this book. The man, the father, he's just this figure of fierce, grim determination. His entire being is focused on one thing.
The boy's survival.
Yes, but more than just physical survival. It's the boy's moral preservation, too.
He's physically breaking down himself, isn't he? That cough. Like the world's decay is inside him. And haunted by memories of the wife, the old world, constantly. And his whole moral code has shrunk down to this one point.
Okay.
The child. McCarthy puts it so starkly. The man thinks he knew only that the child was his warrant.
His warrant.
If I am not for him, what am I? The boy is his reason. The only thing making the suffering bearable.
But the boy, he's the opposite in a way. He is the moral compass. The novel's conscience, almost.
He is. Born after it all fell apart, yet somehow he retains this innate compassion. It constantly pushes back against the father's pragmatism.
He keeps asking, are we still the good guys? That question just hangs in the air.
It does. He's the reason the man sometimes risks sharing their food, the reason they hold on to any shred of kindness.
Yeah.
You mentioned the man seeing him as something holy.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, the line is devastating. If he is not the word of God, God never spoke.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's just, you know, standard religious feeling. It's more like the boy is the only truly unspoiled thing left in that entire gray world. The last pure proof that the old, decent world wasn't just a dream.
Exactly.
Now, before we follow their journey south, we have to talk about the mother, the wife. She's only in flashbacks, dreamlike sequences, but her choice is pivotal.
Hugely pivotal. She chose suicide. She represents, well, maybe the rational response to an utterly irrational, hopeless world.
She couldn't face the decline, chose her own ending.
Yeah, she's the foil to the father's sheer, stubborn will to persist. She saw the odds, the horror to come, and opted out.
But does that undermine the father's quest? I mean, you could argue her choice was the sane one, couldn't you? Facing that kind of prolonged horror.
That's precisely the tension McCarthy sets up. She accepts the logic, the impossibility. The father refuses. He operates on this pure, maybe irrational, faith invested entirely in the boy.
Even if it means agony.
Right. Her absence shapes his fight. She chose the end of the story. He's determined to keep writing it, no matter how bleak the page.
Okay. So, we have the fire, and the two souls trying desperately to carry it. Let's track their journey now, how the world keeps trying to snuff that fire out.
And it starts almost immediately. The initial trek south just hammers home the constant danger.
That first really brutal encounter.
Yeah, with that road crew member. An immediate threat. The man has to use one of those precious two bullets, kills him to save the boy.
And that's the boy's initiation, isn't it? Into the harshest reality, the father compromising himself right away for survival.
It sets the tone. But the physical threats, while constant, pale next to the moral horror they encounter later when they explore that stately old house.
Hoping for supplies, maybe shelter.
And they go down into the cellar and find people kept captive as livestock for cannibals. That discovery, it's the absolute definition of the bad guys.
It's more than just shock value, though. It's McCarthy showing what happens when humanity abandons the fire. The only difference between us and predators becomes our capacity for, well, organized cruelty.
Systematic depravity. They flee in absolute terror, obviously, and it reinforces why they have to stay isolated, why trust is impossible.
But then amidst all that grayness, there's this moment of just shocking grace. The bunker.
Bunker, a true oasis, literary and literal. Hidden underground, fully stocked, canned food, water, warmth, a ghost of the old world's abundance.
It's this temporary, almost dreamlike return to safety. Feels unreal.
But it's almost cruel too, isn't it? To give them that taste of warmth, of plenty of those peaches, the description is so vivid, only to force them back out.
Yeah, the man knows it's an illusion. Too fragile, they can't stay, they have to keep moving south.
So the journey resumes, and soon after, they face two really critical moral tests. First, the encounter with Ely.
The old man on the road?
Yeah, Ely. He's the sort of nihilist figure, old, broken down. He explicitly says there's no God, the world's meaningless. He's a direct counterpoint to the man's desperate hope, which is all tied up in the boy.
And the boy, true to form, insists they share food with Ely.
Of course he does, constantly testing his father, pitting that innate goodness against the harsh practicality of their situation.
And the father lets him. He gives Ely food, recognizing maybe that protecting the boy's soul, that fire, is worth more than a few cans.
But the real crisis, the one that really shakes the father, comes later. The thief.
Someone steals their cart. Everything they own.
Yeah.
Their means of survival.
The man tracks him down, gets the cart back. But then he makes this incredibly harsh decision, forces the thief to strip naked at gunpoint, takes his clothes, his shoes.
Leaving him to die of exposure, a certain agonizing death.
It's brutal pragmatism. Arguably necessary for their own long-term survival.
Yeah.
But the boy, he's absolutely shattered.
He just weeps and weeps for the man they've condemned. Accuses his father, basically, of becoming one of the bad guys.
And that cuts the father deeper than anything. He was supposed to be the guardian of that moral line. And in his son's eyes, he crossed it. Utterly failed the test.
He tries to backtrack, leave some clothes behind, but the damage is done. You see the toll it takes?
Yeah, the journey is destroying the man physically, with the cough and weakness, but it's also eroding his soul. And then comes the final geographical blow. They reach the coast.
Their goal for the entire journey, months of suffering, walking towards this idea of the sea of warmth.
And it's just more gray, another dead, polluted landscape. The ocean is cold and dark. The dream just dissolves.
Salvation isn't a place on a map. They have to realize it's internal or it's nowhere.
And right around then, things accelerate towards the end. The man gets wounded. An arrow in the leg during a skirmish.
And that, combined with the cough, the general wasting away, His decline speeds up drastically. Infection sets in.
He knows his time is running out, and this leads to the climax, the heart of the book, really. His final words, his final instructions to the boy.
So simple, so devastating. Keep trying. And above all, carry the fire.
He's passing the torch, literally. The sole purpose of their immense suffering passed on, ensuring that moral struggle continues after him.
And then the man just dies quietly in the woods, leaving the boy completely alone, the purest soul left facing the world solo.
It seems like the absolute end of hope, but then the resolution, it's fragile, but it's there.
Another man approaches the boy. Turns out he's been following them cautiously, and he's not alone. He's part of a small family.
A woman, two kids, even a dog. And crucially, they identify themselves. They're also the good guys.
And the boy, after some hesitation, goes with them. He chooses connection, chooses to trust again.
The cycle restarts. It suggests the fire can be passed on, that these small pockets of decency, of family, of community, however small, they're the only real hope for endurance.
So, looking at the bigger picture, the novel suggests true survival isn't just about breathing, is it? It's about preserving your soul, preserving love. Exactly. Like the man's mantra. Okay, this is what the good guys do. They keep trying. They don't give up. Being good isn't passive. It's this active, constant, often painful effort. And McCarthy's style, that relentless grayness, the minimalist prose, it makes you feel the deprivation. It makes those rare flashes of connection or color like the peaches incredibly intense.
Absolutely. When everything else is stripped away, institutions, safety, meaning that unconditional love between parent and child becomes the only solid truth left.
So the final thought, maybe.
Yeah.
The book's lasting power lies in the question it leaves with us, doesn't it?
I think so. What does it really mean for us now in our world, which is less obviously broken, perhaps? What does it mean to carry the fire? And what's the line, big or small, that we wouldn't cross?
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekater Foundation.